This month, our theme for programs has been community. The first Sunday of the month, we celebrated together with a water communion led by Betts and Sandra. And then the Reverend Bob Tucker spoke to us the following Sunday on the history of community and also its current decline and the epidemic of loneliness in this country that's not being solved by Facebook. And then last Sunday, Kathy M. spoke to us about the importance of volunteering in our communities. So we all agree that community is very important, but is it possible to create meaningful community in such a transient world? Community once was a matter of living in the same neighborhood for years. It was a geographical phenomenon. But I assert that community is not a matter of geography, but of intention. 2 years ago, when Red and I moved back to Bay Cliff, it's already been 2 years. It's hard to believe, isn't it? I considered searching for a new community. You know, I was geographically closer to the Bay Area UU, and I thought I might as well hook up with another congregation. I mean, they were UUs, right? And they had a minister. We visited Bay Area a couple of Sundays, and I even signed up for a workshop called Aging with Humor, or something like that. It turns out there is nothing funny about getting old. So I did not go back after the first session. But Bay Area has a lot going on. They have something going on every day of the week. They have a lot to offer, and they're doing wonderful work. They have a robust community, but it wasn't mine. This is my community. I feel at home here. This is a place I come every week to recenter, to get my balance back, to show up and know that this is a place like that bar in the TV show Cheers, where everybody knows your name. I'm comforted by being here and by being with all of you. We have a wonderful community here. It's a treasure not to be taken for granted. We have so many opportunities to connect in this fellowship. There's the adult forum, there's the bowlers, the book club, the spirituality of poker group. If you're a visitor, you may not know about that. There's supper circles. You can volunteer to serve on the board and other committees and teams. There are the UU musicians if you have musical talent. There's the social action committee, the program worship committee, the membership team, the A team that provides administrative support, the caring committee. All of these provide the opportunity to socialize and engage with others in our fellowship. And many of these groups have the common agenda of improving our lives and the lives of others. Some of the groups offer the chance to intellectualize and discuss, like the book club. Some offer us an opportunity to use our logical problem-solving skills, like the A-Team. And in some, we can engage our artistic and musical talents. Other groups offer the chance to flex our skills and gifts at consensus building, which is a real challenge with us UUs. And some of the groups exist simply to have fun. But there is a need not always met in these groups. We also need people to help us hear our own voices, to help us tune in to our inner guidance system, our true self, our soul, if you will. Occasionally, we need to be in a group of people who are committed listeners, friends who will listen to us with their hearts and provide a place for us to be able to speak from our hearts. Because our faith emphasizes the importance of self-reliance and the importance of the responsibility of the individual's search for truth and meaning, some of us may think we don't need other people to help us get in touch with the wisdom of our own soul. We may think we can only hear our guidance when we're alone, when we're in solitude. And while it's true that solitude is crucial, it's also true that we need other people. We need to be present to one another as a community of individuals. This may sound like a contradiction because we think of solitude and community as an either-or situation. But solitude and community go together. To understand true self or soul, we need both the interior intimacy that comes with solitude and the realistic balance that comes with community. When we split solitude and community into an either-or proposition and act as if we can get along with only one or the other, we put ourselves in spiritual peril. The German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer warned about this risk. He said, "Let the person who cannot be alone beware of community, and let the person who is not in community beware of being alone." Bonhoeffer's warning is based on two simple truths. We have much to learn from within, but it's easy to get lost in the labyrinth of the inner life. And we have much to learn from others, but it's also easy to get lost in the confusion of the crowd. This thesis is echoed by the Quaker theologian Parker J. Palmer. In his book, The Hidden Wholeness, Palmer offers two Quaker convictions. Number one, our guidance comes not from external authority, but from the inner teacher. And secondly, we need community to help us clarify and amplify the inner teacher's voice. So the fact is, we need solitude and community simultaneously. What we learn in one mode can check and balance what we learn in the other. Together, they make us whole. But exactly how solitude and community work together can be tricky. When we say we're in solitude, we often bring other people with us. Think of how often your solitude is interrupted by an interior conversation with someone who's not there. Michael Singer, in his book, The Untethered Soul, calls this the inner roommate, or as I like to call this voice, my crazy roommate. My crazy roommate manifests itself like that creature from the original Alien movie, the first movie, where when the Nostromo's crew discovers this alien spacecraft full of eggs, and one of the crew members leans over to inspect the egg, and out pops this creature and spits acid on the space helmet and then melts itself onto the face of its crew member. All right, that's my inner voice. So sometimes you need someone to say, "Cheryl, you've been hijacked by an alien. Your inner thinking is off course." On the other hand, when we're in groups of people, we can lose track of our true self. Think of how easily we can forget who we are when we get entangled in group dynamics. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes our ego kicks in and we succumb to trying to look good or look smart or disagreeing with someone out of habit. Do any of you do that? It's just, if he says black, I say white. And he's not here, thank goodness. It's sometimes difficult to sit quietly and hear the wisdom of our own voice when we're in the presence of others. Sometimes we can lose touch with our soul if we're always surrounded by noise. Parker Palmer provides a useful metaphor to help us understand this. The soul is like a wild animal, he says. Like a wild animal, the soul is tough, resilient, resourceful, savvy, and self-sufficient. It knows how to survive in hard places. I learned about these qualities during my bouts with depression, he says. In that deadly darkness, the faculties I had always depended on collapsed. My intellect was useless, my emotions were dead, my will was impotent, my ego was shattered. But from time to time, deep in the thickets of my inner wilderness, I could sense the presence of something that knew how to stay alive even when the rest of me wanted to die. That something was my tough and tenacious soul. He goes on to say, yet despite its toughness, the soul is also shy. Just like a wild animal, it seeks safety in the dense underbrush, especially when other people are around. If we want to see a wild animal, we know that the last thing we should do is go crashing through the woods yelling for it to come out. But if we will walk quietly into the woods, sit patiently at the base of a tree, breathe with the earth, and fade into our surroundings, the wild creature we seek might put in an appearance. We may see it only briefly and only out of the corner of an eye, but the sight is a gift we will always treasure as an end in itself. Unfortunately, community in our culture too often means a group of people who go crashing through the woods together, scaring the soul away. Sometimes in congregations and in committees, we preach and teach, assert and argue, claim and proclaim, admonish and advise, and behave in ways that drive the shy soul back into hiding. When we do this, the intellect, emotions, will, and the ego will show up, but not the quiet wisdom of the soul. So how can we find a community that will sit quietly and wait with us while our soul emerges from the bushes? One way is through small groups. Parker Palmer calls these circles of trust. In UU parlance, this is small group ministry. We call them covenant groups or chalice circles. They're groups of people who gather to listen quietly to each other as we learn to share deeply. They are not therapy or support groups. Support groups or discussion groups often aren't safe places for deep sharing. Some people dominate, and others feel as though they can't get a word in edgewise. Some people don't think well off the top of their head, and others talk a whole lot, but they can't figure out how to really share what's deep in their hearts. So the structure of a chalice circle is designed to allow people to share deeply and listen with an open heart to their own wisdom and the wisdom of others. We'll start the sessions with a topic, for example, generosity or gratitude or forgiveness or loss. We're considering correlating our topics to reinforce the program themes for our Sunday services. And there are very clear guidelines in the group. There is no fixing or setting someone straight. There's no advising or arguing or even agreeing. Listening is the key. Participation requires discipline on the part of each member. To listen without comment, without judgment, without thinking of your own response, that's the practice. The greatest gift in these groups is the gift of presence, giving your undivided attention while someone else is speaking. Again, in the words of Parker Palmer, if we want to support each other's inner lives, we must remember a simple truth. The human soul does not want to be fixed. It wants simply to be seen and heard. There are many benefits to small group ministry. As the author Margaret Wheatley said, I believe we can change the world if we start listening to one another again. Simple, truthful conversation where we each have a chance to speak, we each feel heard, and we each listen well. People who know each other on a deeper level worship with a deepening connection precisely because of the opening of the heart that occurs in groups, and it carries over into other parts of our lives. The practice of really listening to each other can improve how we work together on teams and committees and our congregation, and how we relate to our family, friends, neighbors, and the community at large. I hope you've seen the announcement in the newsletter and in the weekly emails that we'll be beginning a chalice circle soon. We've already had enough interest to establish one, and I'm hoping that we can start another one so that we can accommodate the schedule of everyone who's interested. So please let me know if you're interested in joining a small group. It's an opportunity right here in our own fellowship to bring solitude and community together. Thank you. Okay, will you please stand now as you're willing and